But all that to say, at the end of the day, this is your baby. This is mm-hmm. your body. And it doesn't matter what these, you know, medical professionals say. Like, you're right. the one that knows your body and your baby best.
Absolutely.
And you should be able to do anything you want because you're the boss.
Yep. Yeah. Say it louder for the people in the back.
Yeah. I mean, it's really annoying and frustrating. You know, I know, Rachel, you have felt the same way. But as doulas, at the end of the day, like, we don't care what our clients choose. We just want our clients' choices to be respected.
Absolutely. That's what
is most important.
Hi, I'm Rachel, owner of the Natural Birth Site, certified birth doula, childbirth educator, and midwife's assistant.
And I'm Tiffany Muniz, certified birth doula, lactation counselor, and midwife assistant.
Here, you'll learn all about different aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
Remember, none of this information should take the place of your care provider and is not medical advice.
Birth is not a medical emergency.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Rachel.
How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing pretty well. I slept in late this morning. I let my brain recover from the homeschool conference I was at all weekend.
Nice.
Which was awesome. Yeah. Learned a lot of good stuff, but my brain needed a break. So.
Great. Yeah, that's amazing.
Good. How about you?
Yeah. I'm feeling great. Yeah. Good. Had a busy week last week, but this week seems to be much more calm.
Oh, thank God.
My son is home this whole week. So that's really awesome. We have some fun things planned for spring break. So we're really excited. Also, I'm off call
for
like a week and a half. So it's great that it like paired up perfectly with my son's spring break, because now I don't have to worry about like childcare or anything like that.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
So yeah, I'm really, really excited about that.
That's awesome. Because
that almost never happens. I mean, I'm basically on call like all the time.
24/7.
Right.
So, I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so nice today we have planned that we are going to do our last episode on interventions.
Yay!
So far we've talked about so many things. Mm-hmm. And today we have planned to talk about postpartum interventions, which is, you know, I think everyone like plans so hard and like looks into mm-hmm. so much information about the birth. But nobody really thinks about like immediate postpartum, like immediately after the baby is born, what happens?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about some of those things today.
Yay. And then after this, we have our question and answer session is, in 2 weeks. So hopefully you've gotten your questions in, because probably right after we re-record this one, we're going to record a question and answer session. So hopefully you've gotten all those in. We've got a good stack of questions that have come in that we're really excited to mm-hmm. take a stab at. So make sure you tune in next week for that. And then once our intervention series is finally over, we have some really good episodes coming.
Really good. Yeah.
We have one with Lily Nichols about gestational diabetes, which we're just over the moon about.
Yes.
And then
also, I can't believe I got to actually meet her. Like, I'm such a fangirl and have been for like so many years. And like, I know you've met her before or whatever, but like, I was dying inside.
It's crazy. Like, this podcast has helped us meet so many cool people.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's same amazing. With like Dr. Stu. What? Like, I got to talk to Dr. Stu.
It's crazy. And then after that, we have one with Allie McClain from the Peaceful Home Birth podcast. And she's mm-hmm. got a really great podcast about home birth. And
one.
So, we have a really good episode with her about clearing out fears. So definitely be following us for the next few weeks or like forever. And rate our podcast.
Please
rate our podcast. We really could use some higher ratings. We have really good ratings so far.
Yeah.
We just need more of them. So we're appearing higher up like in iTunes, however that works.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely rate us, even if it's just a quick like, this is great, or love these ladies, or you'll laugh your butt off because sometimes they say really dumb things. I don't know. Just rate us.
Right. Exactly.
And engage with us on social media. I've got my retainers in again, so those S's are like a struggle for me. Engage with us on social media at The Natural Birth Talk on Facebook and Instagram. Okay.
Yeah.
That's my little plug. I'm done now. Go, Tiffany.
Okay. Okay, so the very first thing that I want to talk about is skin to skin immediately after baby is born. So this goes for everybody, like regardless if you're planning an unmedicated vaginal birth, a medicated vaginal birth, or a cesarean birth. So really what should happen, like as soon as baby's born, baby should come out and be placed right directly on your chest.
Yes,
and
no blanket.
That means there's nothing in between baby and mom. So the gown is taken off, the bra is off, the blanket. What I see a lot in the hospital, Rachel and I were just kind of talking about this, is a lot of times in the hospital, like the nursery nurse will come in or the baby nurse will come in, like right is like when mom is pushing and it's almost time for baby to come. And they'll put a blanket on mom's chest. And then what will happen is baby is born, they'll place baby on the blanket and start kind of like rubbing and quote unquote stimulating baby, right? And then once baby is like pink and crying and making noise, they'll remove the blankets and then put baby skin to skin with a hat on their head.
Yep.
Rachel, do you want to talk a little bit about that? Yeah.
Drives me nuts.
Me too.
First of all, the reasons your baby needs to go straight to your chest is because your body is the best regulator for their blood sugar, body temperature, heart rate, and breathing.
Yes.
Your body is the best regulator. So if your baby is struggling to breathe or your baby's oxygen levels are, quote, low, according to the hospital, they always want to swoop your baby to the warmer and stimulate them and take care of them over there. It never fails. As soon as they put baby back on mom's chest, baby perks up and their oxygen levels improve. Okay. So let's just start there, right? Like, let's just start with putting baby directly on mom's chest. Secondly, when you're rubbing and stimulating baby, you're not just rubbing and stimulating them or, quote, drying them off or cleaning them up, which, I mean, we hear that all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
We're just drying them off.
So dumb,
You're rubbing off their vernix.
Yeah.
And the vernix is that cheesy, nasty-looking but so good for them stuff that is on their body. And some babies are born with it just in their armpits and creases, and others are covered in it.
Yeah.
Either way, we don't want to wipe that off because it is so good for their skin and it's such a good protective layer for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So we think about, or I think about why babies might have vernix. I think it, you know, it acts as a natural lubricant, right? Like we don't need, you know,
Johnson & Johnson baby soap,
olive oil or freaking baby soap to lubricate the vagina because there's already mucus and vernix and blood that's helping.
And amniotic fluid continuing to flow.
Right, exactly. Also, when we talk about vernix, it's also a really great temperature regulator as well. So it doesn't make sense to try to like wipe that off. I always tell people like leave it there or rub it into the skin because that helps protect their skin. So many babies like after birth, which some of this is normal, but they have really, really dry skin. So using that vernix to rub in immediately after the baby is born could help, decrease some of that dry skin.
Yeah. Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here. And today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, How Fun Is That?, Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show.
And it's also antimicrobial. So mm-hmm. like if we think about, you know, somebody who might have like GBS or just like the other regular organisms that live in like the vagina and the perineum, mm-hmm. it helps to protect the baby from any bad pathogens that the baby yeah. might come into contact with as they're born vaginally.
Yeah. And even once they're out, you know, even in a hospital, right. there's stuff yep. in the air. People can have stuff on their hands. Mm-hmm. And that vernix really is such a good protective layer. And it mm-hmm. it really does help their microbiome.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's why that part, you know, that immediate skin to skin is mm-hmm. so, so important. And I know people think like, oh, it's only a few seconds. But those few seconds can make a world of difference. Yeah. yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry.
I was just going to say that, you know, if baby needs stimulated, mom is perfectly capable of doing that. And honestly, mm-hmm. is probably going to do a better job than the nurses.
Oh, for sure.
Because baby hears mom's voice and feels mm-hmm. mom's touch, and they're going to feel more comfortable and relaxed, mm-hmm. which is going to yeah. help their system to function more properly because it's not mm-hmm. stressed out because it's mm-hmm. got all of this, you know, weird environmental stuff coming at it that it doesn't yeah. understand yet, you know?
And it's, I don't know about you, Rachel, but that's something that I've started talking with my clients more recently about postpartum, is that they do have that option of stimulating mm-hmm. their own baby after baby yep. is born. And it is something, I mean, even at the hospital, I haven't really had anybody like push back about mm-hmm. that. Sometimes moms, which it's interesting because I say sometimes moms need a reminder, but mm. also they don't need a reminder because really they know truly what is best for their baby.
Right. Just they just have to be able to shut out what everybody else is saying.
Well, and right. Like just because everyone else is impatient, you know, mm-hmm. for like hearing the baby cry or whatever, you know, moms usually know best. Like they usually know for sure. if something's wrong with their baby. So, you know, listening to moms and respecting that as well.
Absolutely.
Also, the hat that babies, like, especially in the hospital, they usually is, you know, immediately after that baby is born, they're sticking a hat on baby's head. And yep. what the nurses a lot of time will say is, well, babies lose a lot of heat from their heads.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that the baby stays warm. And we do that by putting a hat on them. That's silly because
it's not necessary. As long as baby's on mom's body, her body right. is all the baby needs to regulate their temperature.
Yeah. And it could potentially interfere with breastfeeding. So there's mm-hmm. this like very particular hormonal dance going on after baby is born. And mm-hmm. and part of that like hormonal dance is mom, and every single mom does it, reaches down and kisses her baby on the head.
Yep. Yep.
She's smelling baby. She's smelling all those just really great pheromones. Right. Everyone does it. Mm-hmm. So that could potentially interfere with that as well.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I will say I had one client ever that I was like, let's try putting a hat on your baby only mm-hmm. because, I mean, this was, you know, an hour after the birth, but her baby was so fussy, mm-hmm. like so fussy. And we just couldn't get her to calm down. And finally I was like, maybe she's just cold. Like maybe mm-hmm. for some reason. Now this baby also had like a full head of hair, which mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the hair was helping keep heat in, but also with mm-hmm. the hair being all wet.
Wet, yeah.
Maybe she was cold. So I was like, let's just try it. Mm-hmm. And baby did calm down like yeah. almost instantly, which is crazy. But I've only seen that one time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was one time. And honestly, that time the midwife and the nurse even came in and were like, your baby doesn't need that. Mm-hmm. And I was just explaining like why I did it. Cause I'm like, yeah. usually I agree, you know, yeah. your babies don't need hats. It's very yeah. unnatural to put a hat right on baby.
For sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that was just an interesting story.
And also I think that maybe we can combat some of that by keeping the rooms warm. Like yes. whenever baby is born, like yes. immediately turning off the fans. You know, there are some mm-hmm. hospitals over here that have the fans on the ceilings. Mm-hmm. A lot of moms will have like the handheld fans, you know, as it gets like closer to time of baby yeah. being born. So making sure all of that is turned off and like, or if you're at home, like making sure the heat is turned up.
Mm-hmm. I mean like 75 degrees turned up.
Oh yeah.
Like not like just like 68 to 70, like
warm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is hard. Cause a lot of moms get hot during pushing. Mm-hmm. And so they want mm-hmm. it turned down, but really for your baby, we should keep the temperature warmer. You are 100% right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted by a bird on my balcony.
Oh my gosh, the bird, Rachel.
I know, I can't. Listen, I did this in another episode too when we were talking to Allie McLean. But like, listen.
You guys, she's taking pictures of the bird. I need a picture of
this bird because I don't know if we've marked this one down on our list yet. My son and I are keeping track of the birds that we see at our bird feeders because we homeschool and this is what we find fun. And so we just have a whole list of birds. Okay. Back on topic.
Yeah.
Another thing. So I wanted to ask you, you were just telling me a story about your client from your induction about the blanket situation.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you
yeah.
share that. And then
Do
I have
a story
also.
Yeah.
So you go first.
So a couple of days ago, I had a really amazing mom who she was diagnosed with gestational diabetes earlier in her pregnancy. The birth center that she was with dropped her from care because she required insulin for her fasting blood sugar numbers. Also, guys, like I've gotten her approval to share her story. Just FYI, I'm not just out here like giving people's information out. But so she was induced and everything went really well. And, you know, she was pushing and the baby nurse came in, which is common, you know, usually right before like baby is born, they'll call the extra nurse in.
Well, and just to jump in on that. So you can tell your whole care team about your postpartum plan, but you rarely get to meet that baby nurse before the baby's there. So you rarely get the chance to tell the baby nurse your plan, which is like this weird hiccup
it's
in
so
the hospital.
Silly.
Like it kind of like. Can throw things off.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So the baby nurse comes in and she introduces herself and she, you know, is over by the warmer, checking all of her stuff, making sure it works good. And right as soon as baby is crowning, she like comes up to mom and puts a blanket on mom. Obviously, mom's plan was to do immediate skin to skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my client looks up at the nurse and she says, oh, no, I don't want this. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, like she had already had her gown off of her and she just had her bra on. And the plan was to just, you know, move the bra down as soon as the baby was born. And the nurse says something to the effect of, oh, no, I'm just going to keep the blanket here, you know, to dry off the baby. And then as soon as, and to help stimulate the baby. And then as soon as that happens, as soon as the baby's dry, we'll put the baby skin to skin. And my client's like, no, like I don't care about any of that. If my baby needs stimulated, then I'll stimulate my own baby. So the midwife
Good
who was
her.
There said the same thing. She's like, no, she doesn't want any of that. So you could tell that the nurse was like a little
irked.
Bent out of shape about that.
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, no, I know, but you know,
I know.
It's also important that people know that you can get some eye rolls and some attitude about silly stuff like that.
Right.
So whatever, the baby is born, it ends up being beautiful.
Good.
But I just thought it was interesting, like an hour later, the labor and delivery, no, it honestly was probably like 15 minutes after the baby was born. The labor nurse was like, well, just so you know, it was just to help dry the baby off. You were still going to get skin to skin. And of course, my client.
So she had to bring it back up.
Yeah, back
she
up
was
again.
So
I'm in,
insulted
honestly,
by this that she had to bring it back
know.
Up.
My client probably didn't even, it probably didn't even register in her head. Like that's what was happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, to me, it did because I feel like I do get protective over my clients. And
of course.
Things piss me off, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was totally unnecessary after this beautiful baby was born. And also, guys, this was a VBAC. So that made this birth even more special because she worked so hard for her VBAC and she got it, you know? So she was just like over the moon, so excited, so in love with her baby. And it was just kind of like really unnecessary for that nurse to come in and say something again about it. But all that to say, at the end of the day, this is your baby. This is your body. And it doesn't matter what these, you know, medical professionals say, like you're the one that knows your body and your baby best.
Absolutely.
And you should be able to do anything you want because you're the boss.
Yep.
Yeah.
Say it loud over the people in the back.
Yeah. I mean, it's really annoying and frustrating. You know, I know, Rachel, you have felt the same way. But as doulas, at the end of the day, like most of, like, we don't care what our clients choose. We just want our clients' choices to be respected.
Absolutely. That's what
is most important. So, you know, then when you have like a little Miss Sassafras coming in here and it's just silly.
Well, and sometimes, like you said, you do get those eye rolls sometimes and it is very silly. And it's like, you know, we don't want to upset people. That's not our goal to upset people or hurt people's feelings or insult them. But at the same time, it's not, it's their job to do these things, but it's also their job to respect your wishes. So, you know, sometimes if it hurts their feelings, like that's on them. That's not on you as
also,
the
mom. Can I, Rachel, I know you're not on TikTok or any, or like Instagram. There was this story that had went viral last week.
Yeah.
And this mom was on a podcast, and I guess in her birth plan, I don't know, guys, the details might be a little fuzzy by this point, but this mom was on the podcast and she was telling her birth story. And she said, you know, it was my birth plan that I didn't want anyone touching me while I was in labor. Okay. I guess this nurse had come in and wanted to monitor her baby. She was in the middle of a contraction and she told the nurse, no, I don't want you to touch me right now. The nurse touched her anyway. And the mom punched the nurse. Backed by the most up-to-date science and research, we bring you the best prenatal on the market. Full Well is an amazing prenatal vitamin formulated with the best of the best ingredients and bioavailable nutrient and mineral forms that help to fill in nutrition gaps for mom and baby. These prenatal vitamins are tested for consistent dosing and heavy metals and then verified by a third party for every single batch. That way, you know what you are buying is truly what you need.
Not only does Full Well have an amazing prenatal, they also carry women and men's fish oil, a men's multivitamin, a fertility booster, and an amazing nourished nerves calming tincture, which is one of our favorites. We are both so happy to announce that we can offer you guys a 10% discount on your first order. So you just have to use the code TNBT10. So that's the Natural Birth Talk, TNBT10. The link is in the description below. You can insert that code into the coupon code box to save. Hey, Tiffany, do you have any tips for someone who pee-pees their pants a little bit when they say jump or sneeze? I'm just asking for a friend.
Actually, I have a fantastic suggestion that can be done in the comfort of your own home and was created by published researchers with a background in exercise physiology and physical therapy. It's called Tighten Your Tinkler.
Oh my gosh, silly name, but it must have some serious results.
Yeah, learn more by listening to the audio testimonial in the description or use code TNBT50 for $50 off the signature program.
Hey, listener, do you want a comprehensive yet concise and inexpensive online at your own pace natural birth education course to help you prepare for natural birth, pregnancy, and postpartum? Then check out the description below for that and our helpful products guide. Now back to the show. Well, and probably so what's going on there, mom probably had some physical trauma.
It just went viral. Right. It went viral. And of course, like there are these really big influencers who have like left TikTok now, or creators, whatever they're called, who have left now because, you know, they either sided with the mom or sided with the nurse or, you know, whatever. I feel like I kind of have a different perspective because I did work in the medical field for a long time. But at the end of the day, like, I think that the mom's choices should have been respected.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that so many people get it wrong and they're like, well, I'm the nurse for the mom and the baby.
Okay. Well, you're not the mom for the baby.
Right. And it all goes back to like, mom knows best. So it is your right, everyone listening, as a human, even if this sounds crazy, I know, but even if your baby is in danger or they think that your baby is in danger, it is still your right to decline care.
Yeah.
Period. Point blank. End of discussion. Yeah. So a lot of people were saying like, oh, that nurse should sue for physical, you know, like abuse or whatever.
I mean,
I don't know, guys, I'm on the mom side.
I was going to say, she was told not to touch the mom, and you don't know why that mom didn't want to be touched. Right.
Well, and also,
she could have had
like
some severe trauma and knew that that would trigger her.
Yeah.
And so maybe she was saying, don't touch me, for the protection of the nurse. Like, maybe she knew that that would trigger her. Maybe she didn't. Or maybe, you know, you don't know. And that nurse absolutely should have listened to her, you know, and and maybe the mom just punched out of reaction, kind of like when my kids are chewing really loudly in my ear. And I'm like, you need to go away or I'm going to punch you. Not because I actually want to punch you, but my reaction, you know, like I can just feel that reaction building up in my body. For the record, I've never punched my children.
Well, also,
but, you know, it's just like that reaction, you know.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a certain way that you should behave whenever a mom is in labor and about to have a baby. And I always try to be very respectful of that. So that means no talking really during a contraction, unless if this is somebody who needs a lot of like verbal encouragement or affirmations, or they have asked for that. And the same with touching. Yeah. I have a lot of clients who don't want to be touched during labor at all.
I didn't want to be touched.
Same. I didn't want anyone to talk. I didn't want anyone to touch me except for my husband. And like sometimes my doula, but like, and I know that a lot of other women feel that way. But you know, a lot of women get epiduralized and then, you know, a lot of times they're like, okay, we can do whatever we need to do. But for those moms who are, especially those moms who are having unmedicated births, who request not to be touched, you need to listen to them, period. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I do agree
with
that. Or
for you not to touch their baby.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. If I had one client, so this was, she was a repeat client for me and this was her first natural birth and it was like amazing. On the floor of the bathroom, it was her OB's first like bathroom birth, which was like,
oh,
so cool.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
It was very,
Cause I was supposed to go, but I freaking slept through it. Didn't you call me?
Is that the one I called you? Oh, no, that was a different bathroom one. That was a different bathroom one.
Yeah.
That was bathroom birth though too. But no, this was a different one. Nope.
Yeah.
So this was like the OB's first like bathroom birth and the OB was so cool about it. Like she was like, I am loving it. Well, anyway, baby comes out and the nurses start to stimulate baby. And my client was like, no, stop. And they're like, no, we're just drying up baby. And she was like, no, stop.
Yeah.
And then the OB chimed in and was like, you know, that's okay. Like, you don't have to, you know, you can do that. And you can give your baby little kisses to try and get some of that, mucus out of their mouth and everything. And it was really great. I get why she had to say it twice because the nurses are just in this zone of this is what we do. And this is our habit.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and she had to say it twice and she just kind of snapped the second time, but she'd also like just had a baby on the bathroom floor.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it was a really awesome experience. It was really great for mom to be able to just stand up and say like, no, stop rubbing my baby. Like I can do that. And she did. And everything was just fine. And the nurse again, you know, was kind of taken aback, a little surprised because it's just not what they're used to. There was that mystery bird.
Oh my gosh. Another bird, Rachel.
This is the mystery bird. We haven't gotten identified yet. Oh, I'm dying.
Also, while you're taking the bird pictures, I just want to say something about the story I just talked about. I've seen a lot of people in comments and I've seen some big birth influencers share this story. And everyone, you know, kind of agrees that like the nurse shouldn't have touched the mom. But I've seen some people kind of like victim blaming the mom too. Like, oh, well, you shouldn't have had a hospital birth. Like if you didn't want people touching you. Guys, that's not, no. Like, first of all,
sometimes that's somebody's only option.
Well, right. So, like, we don't victim blame number one, but also like, what if this is a mom who, like didn't have the resources to have a home birth, didn't want a home birth. Like there are some people who just don't want to have home births and that's okay. Like they just feel safer in the hospital.
Or there was like nobody around to do the home birth. You know, there are areas of our country that don't have home birth midwives available.
Exactly. Right. So yeah, I just wanted to also say that too.
Yeah.
Because it was bothering me.
That was a really long bit about skin to skin and not
rubbing
babies.
Right? How did we get here? But you know, like, it doesn't matter. It's important information that people should know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Again, just to remind you guys, like your body is the best regulator for your baby's blood sugar, heart rate, breathing, and body temperature. All four things. Like it, your body, it is proven. It's not just like some anecdotal whatever.
Oh,
like
yeah,
studies
right.
have been done. Your body is the best regulator for all of those things. Not the baby warmer, not the nurse's hands, not a blanket or a hat. It's your body.
It's you. Yep. With nothing in between.
Yep.
Okay. So next, let's go to
Sorry, one more thing. Dads can do skin to skin too.
Yeah, dad should do skin to skin for sure.
So like if mom, like for whatever reason, like maybe mom's having stitches and she's having a hard time with that, or, you know, maybe she, got really lightheaded or something. That's not uncommon after a birth. Mm-hmm. Dad can take off his shirt and put baby skin to skin too. And that is also going to be incredibly helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Okay. So let's do eye ointment next.
Okay. So okay. You go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go for it.
I wrote Eylotysin or erythromycin is what it's usually called.
Yep.
It was originally created for moms who have gonorrhea and or chlamydia.
Chlamydia, yep.
Right. Now we put it on all moms, and I've heard nurses say this. They say, because vaginas are dirty.
Yep. I actually heard that at a birth 2 years ago.
I've heard it multiple times.
Also, and it makes me so mad. Because I was in shock. I was in shock that a nurse
thought your vagina was dirty.
Say something like that. Yeah.
Right. Because what are our vaginas? They are self-cleaning organs.
Mm-hmm.
Self-cleaning organs. They don't need soap. They don't need antibiotics. They don't need an iodine rinse.
Yep.
They don't need anything. They're self-cleaning organs. Your vagina is not dirty.
Uh-huh.
Not dirty. Okay. Yep. That makes me so mad when I hear nurses say that.
Yeah.
So that's what the erythromycin or the eye ointment was for. It's an antibiotic eye ointment that was originally created for moms who are positive for gonorrhea and chlamydia, because those things, if the infection gets in the eye, can cause the blindness in the baby.
Right. So if the baby is born vaginally
and
mom has one of those infections, then it could potentially cause blindness in the baby.
Potentially.
Yes.
Not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So how many do you know of any clients? I mean, I guess we shouldn't ask that, but I haven't had any clients who are positive for gonorrhea or chlamydia. But I still have clients get the eye ointment, and that's your choice if that's what you want.
Yeah, for sure.
But studies have shown, evidence-based birth has a pretty good article on it, actually.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Studies have shown that a wait and see approach is just as effective. Mm-hmm. If my baby gets an eye infection, then I will use the antibiotic eye ointment, mm-hmm. just as mm-hmm. effective as a preventative measure.
Yeah.
Also, studies have shown that breast milk is just as effective
mm-hmm.
as the antibiotic eye ointment. Breast milk fixes everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, not literally, but pretty much. Like, so those are just some alternative options. If your baby gets an eye infection, then you can put some breast milk in it.
Right.
Or then you can
do the antibiotics if you want. Yeah. Also, guys, any baby who's born via C-section does not need this. It's pointless. There's no reason.
Because they're not getting the, quote, dirty vagina.
It's so stupid.
I put that in quote because it just makes me so mad.
Yeah. So I always tell people it's, like, totally fine to decline it no matter what. But specifically, your provider will probably say, like, as long as you don't have any STDs or STIs and neither does your partner or your partners. Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't judge. As long as the people that you are having intercourse with also are free of those infections, then it is totally fine to decline those, you know, that the eye ointment. Other things that I have heard, though, you've probably heard these things, too.
Uh-huh.
If your baby has meconium that the baby needs eye ointment.
Oh, my gosh. I've actually not heard meconium that one. That's stupid.
Well, meconium is sterile. So that's just like not the way that
it works. They were already living in that.
Right. If you have GBS.
Oh, I have heard that one.
Yeah, no.
Not an eye disease.
I don't even think that, I mean, I don't know for sure. I should probably look this up, but I almost wonder if that infection is susceptible to those antibiotics.
Yeah. If those antibiotics would even help fight would that even infection. Cover that.
Yeah. That's a good question. Like, vaginas are dirty, obviously. You've heard that before, as have I. If your water has been broken for a long time, not a reason to get eye ointment, you know?
Nope.
But yeah, those are just some of the reasons I've heard nurses say to people that they should get the eye ointment if they were going to decline it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And why would you want to decline it other than it's unnecessary, right? Mm-hmm. It can sting your baby's eyes. Mm-hmm. It can be very uncomfortable for your baby. They're brand new. They've never had something like that. And so, our eyes sting and we're like, whatever, we'll get over it. But that's a brand new baby who's never felt that or anything. That's literally the worst thing they've ever felt other than the birth itself, you know? Mm-hmm. So it can sting their eyes and it can interfere with breastfeeding because it interferes with their vision and is distracting. Yep. I mean, think about it. If your vision was blurry, would you be able to focus on learning new material?
Well, and here's the thing. I don't think people understand. Babies have really bad vision anyway. Mm-hmm. Like they can only see like a very small distance away from themselves.
The perfect distance from breast to mom's
eyes. From breast to baby. Yeah, exactly. So when you're putting eye ointment on top of that and they can only see, I don't know exactly how, what the distance is.
But I want to say it's like 8 inches or something.
Let's just say it's 12 inches. You're putting that eye ointment in their eyes. It makes everything all blurry and goopy. I don't know if a lot of moms know this, but the reason why your areolas and nipples like darken during pregnancy is so that baby can see them after they're born.
Okay. So I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's like the whole reason why they do it, so that they can see the darkened area. Also cool. Like the Montgomery glands. Did you know about that? Which are like the bumps on your areola.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when we're interfering with that, we're potentially interfering with how baby can latch to the breast after they're born. So they also do have a really great sense of smell, but you know, vision and smell are very, very important for them. So when we're interfering with one of those, that, you know, can make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it's an antibiotic, so it can potentially affect their microbiome. You know, yeah, it's just on their eyes. It's not oral, but you don't know like what that antibiotic could do. And plus there's always a risk of allergic reaction. You know, that is a medicine and it could make baby's body negatively.
Yep. Every medication that you take or your baby, it's put on their skin or whatever, there is always the potential for an adverse reaction.
Yep.
Yep.
So this really is a big part of what made me become a doula, because when my son was born, we did not want to do the eye ointment. And my midwife was completely on board with that. She was like, okay, you just got to sign a waiver from the hospital. And I was waiting on the waiver. And she had left and gone home, because this was a few hours after the birth. And the pediatric nurse had my baby now, and my husband was over with my baby, and I was in the bed. And she looked at my husband and said, I know you were waiting for that waiver, but it's not signed yet. So I'm just going to put it on him. And she wiped the eye ointment right on his eyes, right in front of my husband. My husband looked her dead in the eyes and wiped it off. Yeah. This pediatric nurse was terrible, and she's why I became a doula. And luckily it wasn't something worse than that, but you know, it was very much a situation where I wouldn't have blamed a mom if she'd have punched a nurse.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
They're like obsessive over it. And that brings us into vitamin K.
Yeah.
So vitamin K, in my opinion, so the three main newborn meds, so we have the eye ointment and the vitamin K, and then usually after 24 hours, they'll offer the Hep B. Of the three, I personally think the vitamin K is the least yucky, but at the same time, I didn't do it with my third. And I don't, you know, you being a nurse, how do you feel about the vitamin K? What do you think?
Okay. So the reason why they give it is because babies are born without vitamin K. So they give it to babies, obviously, to supplement, because their bodies aren't making it yet. But particularly the studies that have been done about vitamin K, vitamin K is for blood clotting. So it's like when your blood is too thin and it doesn't have those clotting factors yet. so specifically for brain bleeds when baby is born. So, you know, I think a lot of times there's confusion about what exactly the vitamin K is given for. I hear some people say like, it's given for bleeding, but like, you know, for circumcision or for bruising or, you know, lots of other reasons I've heard. No, it is strictly given. And I think a lot of nurses don't even know this. I just had this conversation with the nurse at the same induction. My client had decided that she didn't want the injectable vitamin K. She had brought her own oral vitamin K from home that she was going to give to baby. And the nurse had questioned and said, well, you know, we can't really give any meds that are brought from home.
Okay, but mom can.
Right. And she wasn't denying that. She was just saying, like, I can't personally give any meds that are brought from home, but can you tell me why you're uncomfortable with the vitamin K here? Mm-hmm. And my client just was kind of like, no, I just, you know, I have my own and that's just kind of what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And the nurse was like, okay, like if it's about the aluminum that is in the vitamin K, I want to let you know that it's a, I don't remember exactly the number, but it was like 0.001% or something.
And, well, it's still and there.
And that it's excreted very quickly from the baby's body. And the nurse was just kind of like, we have our own oral vitamin K that we can give to the baby.
So what they do with their oral vitamin K is they just break open the one they were going to inject with and give it orally.
Right.
Which means it still has the aluminum in it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's no different. And she said that. She said it's not, it's the same. It's the same medication that we would give, you know, via the shot. Yeah. So I lost my train of thought of where I was going with that. Oh, no, no, no. You know, the point of all of that is to say that sometimes I don't even think some of the nurses or the medical staff know the real reason why it's being given. And honestly, I didn't know this either until 2 years ago. I assumed too, like, oh, it's for like all bleeding. No, the studies that are done are only on brain bleeds.
Which are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly rare.
Yeah, but people will say they're rare because of vitamin K.
Well,
just FYI.
Well, that is interesting, but also not true. Like they're rare without vitamin K.
No, you're right. You're
and
right.
Vitamin K just tends to knock it down to zero, like the risk down to zero. But they're already incredibly rare in the first place.
So some reasons why people might decline the vitamin K. Well, one, they just simply don't want to. And that is an okay enough answer. Some people don't want to give it because it is an IM injection and they don't want to. So that means like in the muscle. So some parents just don't want to do that. Other parents don't want to do it because of the ingredients in the injection or even the oral. And I think that all of those reasons are good enough reasons.
Right.
In my experience, it really is like 50-50. Some people want to give it because it makes them feel better and feel safer. Other people don't want to do it for all sorts of reasons. Either they don't vaccinate and they don't want to do any injections at all, or they feel like there's a reason why my baby was born without the ability to make vitamin K until they're a little over a week old, you know, and maybe I should honor that. I have clients who at first decided they didn't want it. And then something happened during the birth and they decided they did want it. You know, I don't know. It's something that we did with PAX. And hopefully when we have another child, I'm not sure that I would do it again. You know what I mean? Because I feel, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I think that if I did do it, it would definitely be like the oral.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, of all the three of the newborn meds, I feel like the vitamin K has the least potential side effects. Another thing, a lot of vitamin Ks have a black box warning. And I don't fully understand why there's a black box warning because in my opinion, what I've found
it's when it's given IV.
If it's given IV, is that what it
is? Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
So yeah, I've always thought that was like weird that it has a black box warning, but it does. That is a reason why some people skip it.
For sure. But also, like the route that it's administered by obviously makes a difference. And and babies aren't getting vitamin K by IV.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, but I do. Right. Like I'm with you. Like I understand why people decline it. I understand why people want it. And I feel like it's one of those things. It's like a really hard decision, even for myself personally to make.
Some other things. So vitamin K has been correlated with higher rates of jaundice. So that is something to keep in mind, especially like certain ethnicities already have a higher rate of jaundice just naturally. And I don't really know why that is. But I do know like it's been studied and, but it does increase the rate or the risk of jaundice that has been correlated. Now, will I say it's been proven? No, but I've seen it. I've even seen it with the oral, like just anecdotally. I've seen it even with the oral increasing rates of jaundice, probably because whatever ingredients are in it, in that vitamin K, it goes into the body and it's such a high dose that for some babies, like their liver and kidneys have a hard time.
Well, also I have
been getting rid of that. And that's what causes the jaundice.
I have a different idea of why that might be. So many babies are induced. these mm-hmm. days, right? 38, 39 weeks. That seems to be like the pretty general mm-hmm. time frame that babies are induced. I think a lot of these babies are being born. Their bodies just aren't all the way quite ready yet.
Yeah, could be.
So, you know, their digestive systems, like their ability to feed and their breathing are usually those last things that are forming inside mm-hmm. of mom's body. So how do we know that, you know, these babies who are born at 37, 38, 39 weeks, how do we know that their mom's normal gestation isn't like 41, 42 weeks?
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's say that you have a mom who has to get induced or chooses to get induced at 37 weeks because her baby is measuring big.
Yeah,
And maybe she has the diagnosis of gestational diabetes or has one high blood pressure reading. Mm-hmm. She gets induced at 37 weeks. Mm-hmm. But we know either from a previous pregnancy or a later pregnancy that her normal time that she goes into labor is in between 41 and 42 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then, so then that would mean that she's delivering her baby about 3, 4, 5 weeks early. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And what do we know about babies that are born that early?
They have a really hard time adjusting to the outside world.
They might have a hard time breathing. Mm-hmm. And those are things we know for sure.
Yeah.
So then you're taking that baby whose digestive system maybe isn't all the way developed yet, or even their respiratory system isn't all the way developed yet. And we're giving them these medications, which is similar to what you're saying. Like their mm-hmm. body, it's already immature.
Yeah.
So what a normal body would already have a hard time, you know, detoxing and processing, mm-hmm. that earlier baby is going to have even a harder time.
Yeah. And that's true. And that can definitely be a factor and play a big role in jaundice. And then the other thing I wanted to say about vitamin K is that there are some studies now that are showing that if mom is consuming enough vitamin K, it will appear in her breast milk. So I think the problem is that especially in our industrialized cultures, do any of us really consume enough vitamin K? Are we eating enough leafy greens
People might not even know how to get vitamin K.
Right. And we're not consuming enough of the things that give us vitamin K. And mm-hmm. so obviously you can, if you don't want to do the vitamin K shot, but you just want to be extra safe, you can supplement with a vitamin K product, you know, like a D3 K2 type product or mm-hmm. like a green smoothie or mm-hmm. something like that. Usually those are really high in vitamin K. And I can't say that studies are proving that if mom consumes enough vitamin K, it helps protect baby, but they are proving that if mom consumes enough, it shows up in her breast milk. And I don't mm-hmm. think that it's then a far reach to say, mm-hmm. well, if it's in her breast milk, then baby's going to get it. Right. Like mm-hmm. that's just kind of like the logical next thought there. So that is something to keep in mind. And then as far as the oral vitamin K, mm-hmm. different regulating agencies and stuff, different like types of agencies, like, you know, ACOG and NARM and ones from other countries as well. Like mm-hmm. they all kind of have different opinions on the oral vitamin K. Mm-hmm. Most of them say it's not effective or it's not as effective as the shot. There is an agency, and I think it's the United Kingdom, that mm-hmm. actually is a proponent of oral vitamin K and says it's just as effective. But there was a study done in Denmark that showed that if you gave the oral vitamin K once a week for 9 weeks, mm-hmm. it was just as effective as the shot.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Because most mm-hmm. of the time when you look at oral vitamin K, they say give it once a month for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess, isn't quite as effective as the shot. But once mm-hmm. a week for 9 weeks, that study in Denmark showed that it was just as effective.
That's cool.
So there are options out there. I gave the vitamin K. I wanted to do oral with my first. I was bullied mm-hmm. out of it. Mm-hmm. This is important. After my midwife left, the pediatric doctor came mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. and said to me, if you don't give your baby the vitamin K shot, if something goes wrong, I won't help him.
Mm. Wow.
She looked me straight in the eyes and told me if something went wrong, she wasn't going to help my baby if I didn't give him the vitamin K shot. I was 21 and it's 1 a.m. and I just gave birth and I didn't know what to do. My midwife had left. My midwife was totally fine with me not doing vitamin K. I had oral mm-hmm. vitamin K I was going to give mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. I had it with me and I felt like, okay, well, I guess I have to give it to him. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously incredibly frustrating, especially now as a doula looking back and knowing that what she did was illegal. Mm-hmm. To not help my baby just because I didn't give a shot, that would be 1000% illegal. Like, she mm-hmm. cannot do that. It mm-hmm. was a complete bluff just to manipulate me.
Yeah. Also, I want to say something that a lot of people will talk to their OB provider about this, their mm-hmm. midwife, you know, their doctor, whatever. But particularly if you were in a hospital, the midwife and the OB have no say over what happens with that baby after the baby is born.
Right.
So right. yeah, you can, and I'm not blaming you, Rachel. Like,
right.
How are
I know
you supposed
not.
To know this?
Right.
Like, we don't know this if nobody tells us. But right. So everyone goes to their OB provider and their prenatal visits and they're like, okay, I don't want vitamin K. I don't want Hep B. I don't want the Islotycin. And their OB provider's like, okay, cool. I'm cool with that. Right. That's yeah. because they have nothing to do with it.
Right. Right. And they probably should prep you like, hey, you're going to have to talk to the people at the hospital right. about these
they
things.
They should say like, after the baby's born, I have nothing to do with the baby. Mm-hmm. The pediatrician or the pediatric, you know, nurse practitioner or whatever, they're the ones that assume care for the baby after the baby is born.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be more upfront with people to tell them the truth about that.
Right.
Because
right.
that is messed up because you went into your birth thinking, okay, yeah, this is no big deal.
Right.
You know, my midwife already said that this was fine. It's on my birth plan. My nurses know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And then this POS doctor comes in mm-hmm. afterwards and coerces you into giving it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so with my second, I didn't even try to fight it.
Mm.
And then I just did it just because did it, yeah. It was a different hospital, but I guess I just didn't mm-hmm. even try to fight it. And then with my yeah. third, I didn't do it at all. We didn't do yeah. oral or the shot. And yeah. I just made sure I was consuming enough vitamin K.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some other things to keep in mind with vitamin K. Hospitals will not circumcise your baby if you don't give vitamin K. Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of areas have a rabbi, like we have a moyle, I think it's pronounced how it's pronounced, M-O-H-E-L, yeah. but it's pronounced mm-hmm. moyle. Mm-hmm. Have a moyle that will do it on day 8 because mm-hmm. baby's blood vitamin K levels naturally peak on day 8.
Mm-hmm.
Just naturally. It's yeah. science, which is cool. I'm going to throw in a Bible fact here. Really cool because in the Bible, they were told to circumcise their babies on day 8.
Yep.
Do you think they had the science mm-mm. to know that that's when baby's blood vitamin K levels naturally peak? Like, mm-hmm. no, they didn't know that. But now with mm-hmm. science, we can say like, oh,
yep.
well, that must be why they did day 8.
That's the reason why.
Just like a really cool connection there.
And like in the Jewish community, I know that when, you know, they circumcise for religious reasons mm-hmm. And they always hold that ceremony. I'm pretty sure it's called a bris.
That might be right. Yeah.
They hold that on like day 8.
Yep.
Which is also, I think, when they name their children too.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. at least in like the traditional type Jewish right. communities. But yeah, so a local rabbi or moyle can do a circumcision outside of the hospital day 8 or later.
And I've had several clients use him.
Same.
They love him.
Absolutely. I've never He's had amazing. Anybody complain about
so
him.
If it's something that you're going to do, yeah, we definitely recommend reaching yeah. out to him to do
so
it.
So if you're in the St. Louis area, yeah, his name's Rabbi Mike.
Hit us up. Yeah, hit us up. Right. Yeah, he's like studied. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's done like thousands and thousands
oh, yeah.
of circs, and he's like been in Israel and has done them there. And yeah.
So they're highly so trained.
Probably more than like what an OB would do.
Yeah, probably.
And or whoever does them at the hospital, I don't know.
The moyles are highly trained, and it's like a gentler form of circumcision. I guess we're talking about circumcision now. It's a gentler form of circumcision. If you feel the need to circumcise, this is a really, really good route to go,
yeah.
especially if you're not doing vitamin K. But even if you're doing vitamin K, I mean, I think yeah. both Tiffany and I are going to recommend a circumcision outside of the hospital if
for
you're
sure.
going to do it
if
in
that's
the first
something
place.
You're gonna do.
You know,
yeah.
you also can choose not to do it, and that's
yeah.
perfectly safe
and
fine
totally
for your
fine.
Baby.
Yep.
That's a topic for a different time, I guess.
But, yeah, we don't have enough time to talk about
circumcision. We should get him
today.
On our podcast.
I wonder if he would.
I bet he would.
Have you
okay.
met him?
Food for thought. I've talked to him like via email and stuff. I have not met him directly, but I know a lot of people have used him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, though, the vitamin K. So if you don't want to get vitamin K, but you do want to have your son circumcised, a moyle can do it outside of the hospital or like a pediatric urologist.
Yeah.
It can
yeah.
do it. So don't feel like you're only giving vitamin K just to get the circumcision done. Like you can deny
there
vitamin K and
do
circumcision do
yeah,
later,
there are other ways
you know, that's,
that. Yeah.
if that's
yeah.
something that you want to do, you can also
okay
the vitamin
you, right?
K, you know, that's
yeah.
up to you.
Yeah. Okay. What's next? Okay. Delayed cord clamping slash optimal cord clamping slash the delivery of the placenta.
What does a hospital count as delayed cord clamping, Tiffany?
30 seconds.
30 to 60 seconds.
Yeah, 30 to 60 seconds. Is that
actually delayed cord clamping, Tiffany?
No, actually that is considered, well, no, if you have a time on it, that is considered delayed cord clamping. Right. I think there's a lot of confusion in the birth arena about cord clamping. So delayed cord clamping is saying we're going to delay the clamping of the cord for 30, 60, 90. You put like a time limit on it.
Uh-huh.
What we recommend is actually called optimal cord clamping.
There you go.
So that means we're letting the placenta give all of that blood, all of those stem cells and blood cells and everything to the baby until the cord has completely stopped pulsing, until the placenta is completely done.
So, you know, an important thing to remember there is when your baby is born, a third of their blood volume is in that placenta.
Yep.
A third of their blood volume is in that placenta. And if you cut that cord right away, or even 30 or 60 seconds later, your baby's not getting all of their blood back. And that means they're not getting all of the good, like all the good blood cells.
Blood cells, stem cells.
That's what I was looking for.
Oxygen.
Because that oxygen's in the blood.
It makes no sense. A baby is struggling after the baby is born. So we cut them from their lifeline.
Right. We cut off their oxygen supply
and take them to the warmer and give them oxygen that's coming out of a wall. It doesn't make sense.
No, because how is that baby breathing in the womb? How are they getting their oxygen?
From their effing placenta.
From their placenta and their umbilical cord. That's how they got blood inside the womb and oxygen inside the womb. And once they're born, as long as that cord is still pulsing, they are continuing to get oxygen through their umbilical cord and placenta.
Have you ever been to a resuscitation at home?
Like
for baby.
Yes. One time.
Same. One time for me. And of course, nobody ever really wants to have their baby resuscitated or anything like that. So I'm not saying that this was like a good thing. But what I'm saying is I've seen resuscitations outside of the hospital and in the hospital. And I have to say, it was the one that I saw outside of the hospital was beautiful in a way that mom held her own baby.
Yep.
That skin to skin contact happened throughout the entire thing. The baby was still hooked up to its placenta via the umbilical cord. The placenta was still inside of mom. So it was still attached to her uterus. And that was the baby's lifeline while all of this was happening.
Yep.
So I, again, like resuscitations aren't beautiful, but if you've ever seen them in a hospital where they take baby away from mom, they cut the cord, they take the baby over
and
to
they
the warmer,
scare everybody.
They scare everybody in the room. Versus a resuscitation, obviously, is still scary, like outside of the hospital. But the fact that this mom got to hold her baby, talk to her baby, kiss her baby, rub her baby while all of the other things were happening, while at the same time, baby continuing to get that oxygen from the placenta was amazing. And I have chills right now talking about it because it makes such a huge difference.
It's a completely different situation in the hospital versus outside the hospital. And actually, I guess I have to say I've been to two, because one was in a birth center and one was in a home birth. Either way, it was handled the same way where baby stayed attached. And so, and the other really cool thing about that placenta still being attached and that cord still being attached is you can tell baby's heart rate just from feeling the placenta and palpating their heart rate on the placenta or on the umbilical cord, on the umbilical cord. So you know baby's heart rate without a stethoscope. You know baby is getting oxygen because you can feel it pulsing. And to be honest, it's very normal for babies to take up to a minute to breathe after birth. And that is not, that is something that in a hospital, they're going to cut and swoop baby off, you know, if it takes them a minute. But in a home birth or just in, with a knowledgeable provider, we know that it's normal for them to take up to a minute to breathe. And we know that that's okay because they're still getting their oxygen through the placenta and umbilical cord, just like they did in the womb. And so to cut that off, like you said, is it's like asinine.
Yeah.
I mean,
barbaric. I feel like for me,
it doesn't make sense. Think, stop and think, people. Like, stop and think, please. And that just comes back to the fear of birth and the fear of everything that's instilled in people in the hospital so often.
One thing I see sometimes in the hospital, sometimes even out of the hospital, is, you know, the baby will be born. and it's been like a minute or two since the baby has been born. Mm-hmm. And the provider will say, oh, the cord's done pulsing. Are you ready to cut it? So what I tell my you can see when the cord is done pulsing and when it's not mm-hmm. done pulsing.
It'll be like flaccid and white pulsing, versus like blue flaccid, and coily.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes you can even see the pulse. Like you mm-hmm. can see it happen. Like the cord is jumping. So what I usually will tell all of my clients is, oh, you should reach down and feel the cord. Mm-hmm. Because the cord, like you just said, it has a pulse exactly like your wrist has a pulse or your neck yep. has a pulse or whatever. So parents, then you guys can be the deciding factor. Yes, I'm ready for the cord to be cut. No, mm-hmm. I'm not ready. I'd like to wait a little bit longer.
Yep. And I usually even recommend, just to avoid that whole situation, I usually tell my clients to write on their birth philosophy or birth plan to wait until the placenta is born mm-hmm. to cut the cord. And obviously yeah. there are some circumstances where the cord's really short sure, or something yeah. where you may want to cut it sooner than that, but you can change your mind about that in the mm-hmm. moment.
Oh, for sure.
If you absolutely. Put on your plan that you do not want the cord cut until the placenta's out, that is a yep. very firm line.
I was at another birth last week where, yeah, the cord stayed intact till the placenta was born, and they took some really beautiful pictures of mm-hmm. the baby attached to the placenta. I mean, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if... I'm trying to think. It was probably like 45 minutes after the baby was born before they even cut the cord.
Yeah. Yeah. Autumn's, I think it was like 3 hours later.
Yeah.
You guys did like a cord in a hurry. Burning? Yeah. We did cord yeah. burning, which was really, really cool. Yeah. It That's set off really my cool. fire alarm, which was hilarious. I didn't really think that through.
Yeah.
But it was a fun story, right?
That is really cool.
So anyway, other than just getting oxygen through the placenta and the umbilical cord, they're getting much higher blood iron. Or like yep. they're increasing their blood iron stores to last 6 months or more now. Now mm-hmm. we don't have to worry about their iron levels for 6 months or more.
There was a study that I think it was in Sweden. I don't know. Maybe you were about to talk about this, but they followed children who had delayed. Now this was delayed cord clamping. It wasn't mm-hmm. like optimal. Delayed cord clamping, I think it was for like 60 or 90 seconds. And they followed these children until they were school age. And mm-hmm. those children that had the delayed cord clamping had higher IQs. Than makes the babies sense. Who didn't have it.
And that makes sense. And I will say, you know, 30 to 60 seconds is better than nothing.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and even 100%. Something else to say, in a C-section, a lot uh-huh. of the times now, they'll still give you 60 seconds of delayed cord clamping, which is yeah. so good for your baby. Even Another though it's not ideal, you know, yeah. it's better than nothing.
Yep. Another interesting story is I was at a C-section at a hospital over here in Illinois. Rachel, we were both at births that same day, I remember. Uh-huh. My client was having a scheduled C-section, that she had decided to have late in her pregnancy, but she told her providers, like, I am not doing it unless if I get XYZ. One Good of the things was getting optimal cord clamping. So the baby was born. And I mean, I think we waited like 3 or 4 minutes. The baby was just sitting there, like,
That's so
you know,
cool.
mom had the C-section, baby was just sitting there receiving all the blood and so nutrients. Good. It was really, really amazing because that's not something you see in a hospital, mm-hmm. like in a scheduled C-section.
Yeah.
It was really beautiful.
That's really, so, really
if you're
awesome.
Having a scheduled C-section for medical reasons or for not medical reasons, you can certainly say like, I don't know, I'm kind of hardcore. So I feel like I would just be like, no, I'm not doing it until you can guarantee me that I'm getting these things.
Yeah. And I'd be the same way. I'd be like, sorry, no, like my way or the highway, man.
So yeah. And she also got skin to skin immediately. Like literally they took the baby from her belly. They did take her over to the warmer just to trim the cord. The baby was there probably less than 20 seconds. The baby came right to mom, and that's where she remained the rest of the
That's
surgery.
Awesome, because mm-hmm. in C-sections, they almost always take the baby to the warmer. A lot mm-hmm. of times, this baby needs help breathing, probably yeah. because they didn't get all their blood from
squeezed.
The placenta.
Well, also, and they're not being squeezed, right.
They're not being squeezed to stimulate yeah. their lungs. Yep. And then they want to wrap up baby and bring yep. them to mom for, quote, skin to skin. It's like, mm-hmm. leave the baby unwrapped.
Yep.
Put them straight on mom. And dads or partners, you can unwrap that baby and give it to mom. If they yep. hand you a wrapped up baby, you can unwrap that baby and give it yep. to mom. You don't have to leave baby wrapped up. So that's something right. to keep in mind. Some things that I hear about delayed cord clamping. Number one, I hate this so much. Providers will talk to you about backflow. Like when the blood flows back from the baby into the placenta.
Do we not know how gravity works? Like that doesn't make sense. We walk upright and our heart still works.
Right.
Like what?
Right. Well, and I have looked and looked and looked and I cannot find a single study of any kind that says anything about backflow from the placenta. So when these providers tell you this, they're just mimicking someone else who told them that, who probably someone else told them that, who somebody made it up because they didn't want to wait.
Yeah.
Like there is no research at all that supports that statement.
So they're saying that it works via gravity. Okay. Like that's what they're saying. They're saying that the placenta works via gravity. So if the baby is like held lower, isn't that what they say? Like if the baby's held lower, then the placenta, right? That it's going to backflow back into the placenta or higher, whatever. That the blood's going to backflow into the placenta and the baby's going to lose their blood.
Yeah. Not a thing.
That doesn't happen to us. Like when we're up walking around, our blood doesn't all rush to our feet.
Right.
It pumps through our brain and our heart and our arms and everything.
It's crazy. That's when providers say that, I'm like, show me the research.
Yeah.
Because you can't show me the research because it doesn't exist. You're just copying somebody else who was copying somebody else who's copying somebody who made it up.
Right. Like the placenta is literally pumping.
Yeah.
So it's pumping just like a heart. Blood out. Right. Exactly. Just like a heart. Like it just doesn't make sense.
And then another thing that I've heard is increased levels of jaundice with delayed cord clamping. And that I've heard, I have not looked at research on that specifically, but I have heard it from a lot of people just because I'm not really sure why. I guess a higher blood volume means more to detox more for or the something.
Liver, right. So increased red blood cells means more red blood cells for the liver to process.
Okay.
That's the thinking behind it, but there hasn't been any solid. I think there was like one small study that showed a correlation, but guys, correlation doesn't equal causation.
Exactly.
Like it doesn't mean that that's the cause for that. Mm-hmm. Also, I think a lot of people just forget, like most babies get jaundice. Like,
At least to some degree, like,
physiologic jaundice. So really that just means you need to feed your baby more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So
they and maybe put them in the sun.
Like, poop out the bilirubin.
Yeah.
But there haven't been like any good studies that have proven that it causes jaundice. And if it does, I think it's like a very small number. It's like one of those relative risk things.
Yeah. So point of all of that is that if all you can get is 60 seconds out of your provider, then that is better than nothing. Please don't feel like a failure for that. Yeah. But if you can leave that cord attached for minutes or until that placenta is born, it is optimal for your baby. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to that postpartum Pitocin and that active management of the placenta versus expectant management of the placenta.
Yeah. So do you want to explain one and I'll explain the other?
Sure. So
which one you want?
I'll just go with active because that's the most common one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So active management of the placenta means that as soon as the baby's out, you're given a huge bolus of Pitocin, which is that synthetic oxytocin we talked about in other episodes. And that is
like 3 months ago.
Right. that is to cut off the placenta, cut off the blood vessels in the placenta that attach it to the uterine wall. It cuts them off. It gets the uterus to clamp down really, really fast. And gets that placenta to be expelled almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And there is so much that goes into that. There was a really good episode of Down to Birth, I think it was, maybe last year, that they talked with, I can't even remember who it was now, but someone who has heavily researched this type of active management of the placenta.
And I'm going to look it up while you're talking.
Okay. It was.
So we can help you.
It was at least 6 months ago, but probably a year ago that I listened to it. Yeah. And it was talking about how that Pitocin instantly clamps off these blood vessels and instantly expels the placenta. And when those blood vessels are clamped off, it creates this like reaction in the body that actually somehow triggers the uterus to then not clamp down as much, if I'm remembering correctly, later. Mm-hmm. Or something. But anyway, it expels this placenta and the placenta's out and it's all done and your provider can finish up and go home early. Right.
Make it home by dinner.
Right. So if you have had Pitocin during your labor up and through pushing and you've had Pitocin your whole labor or, you know, even just at the end through pushing, then your body probably needs a little bit of Pitocin postpartum to continue doing its job. Mm-hmm. But if you have not had Pitocin during your labor, then that active management of the placenta actually increases the risk of postpartum hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. And when that you use that active management of the placenta, your baby then didn't get all of that good blood because your placenta was ejected from the uterus so quickly that it's no longer pulsing. Because as soon as that placenta comes off the uterine wall, it's no longer pulsing anymore. Because what makes the placenta pulse is mom's body. And that makes the placenta pulse because mom's body is pumping blood into the placenta. So as soon as it's detached from mom's body, it's no longer pumping. So your baby's no longer getting that blood from the placenta anymore. So that active management, though, it really is for provider convenience the large majority of the time.
So Down to Birth, episode 228, it was their August Q&A. They talk about the routine use of postpartum Pitocin. They talk about some other things in that episode as well.
And there's another one, though, where they were interviewing.
I went back a whole year.
Did you? Maybe it was longer ago. It's possible it was Midwife's Cauldron.
Oh, maybe.
That I was listening to, but I was pretty sure it was Down to Birth.
I'm going to look because I listened to them, too. Hang on.
But so that's active management. While you look that up, can I explain the expectant, too? Is that okay?
Go for it. Yeah.
So the expectant management of the placenta is where you let it be born on its own, basically. You wait. The placenta will detach on its own. It'll slough off the uterine wall. And usually we'll see a boost of bleeding when that happens. And that is not scary. That's very, very normal. Or the provider will see the all of a sudden the umbilical cord looks like it's lengthening. And you can kind of see that gush of blood. Mom will start getting crampier again, or she'll feel some really heavy vaginal pressure. And that's just a sign that placenta has kind of come off the uterine wall and detached, and it's ready to just very gently be born. Okay. That might be mom squats and lets gravity pull the placenta out, or that might be the care provider very gently and very carefully guides the placenta out, not yanking on it, just gently guiding it out. And that's the expectant management. And with that, that baby's getting blood the entire time until that placenta comes off the uterine wall.
I have two things to say. Midwife's Cauldron, it doesn't have the episode number, but it's from January 6, 2022. It's an episode. It just says the title is Placentas and Cord Blood. In the description, it talks about all of these things. Second of all, when you're talking about expectant management, I just want to talk about how physiologically it all comes together. Were you done talking about?
Pretty much. Yeah. And I mean, just remembering that expected management does not include postpartum Pitocin.
Right. Yeah. Something I just want to add on to that is how skin to skin makes this all come together.
Yes.
So when baby is skin to skin immediately after birth, that helps increase the amount of oxytocin that your body is producing. So those cuddles, those smells that we talked about when you're like reaching down and kissing your baby, it's really making your body produce a large quantity of oxytocin. Okay.
Yep.
Which just like the Pitocin is eventually going to have your uterus clamped down when your body is done with the placenta.
Right.
Right.
And same with nursing too. Nursing adds even more oxytocin. Yep.
But also if we think about when our baby is born, we bring our baby up to our chest. So the head is usually right below our head and their feet are usually down right about where your belly button is, which interestingly enough is usually right where your uterus is after you give birth. So if you think about the baby's feet right there kicking, because that's what they do during the breast crawl, they're kicking and they're mashing on that part of your belly, it could potentially be helping your uterus to clamp down and stay firm and prevent postpartum hemorrhage.
Ooh, I like that. I've never thought of it like that before.
Isn't that so cool?
That is so cool.
I can't remember where I heard it or if I read it in a book, I'm not sure. But yeah, now I tell everybody that because
I love that.
We talk so much about how in the hospital, birth is like a disease. It's pathologized.
It's an emergency.
It's an emergency. And like, really, when you get down to the nitty gritty of birth, how our bodies and our babies are so smart. And if you just let them work together and not interfere with the process, like how amazing and beautifully it all works out.
I love that so much. So Point being, we're big fans of expectant management of the yeah. placenta, right?
Yeah.
We really want that placenta to come on its own. And a lot of care providers will say it should come within 30 minutes. There are plenty of studies that show 2 hours or more is completely normal. It's uncommon, but it's safe. As long as the bleeding is under control and everybody's feeling okay, it's okay if your placenta takes longer and we don't need to rush it.
Usually in shorter births or longer births is where you see like really short births. I'm talking like less than 2 hours from start to finish, or really long births is those are in my experience are those placentas that are taking a little bit longer. And I think it's just because your brain and your body just need time to catch up with what happened. But I was at a birth, I think last month or the month before. It was a beautiful home birth, but I mean, it was so fast from the time her water or in from the time her body kicked into active labor to the time she had a baby, it was like 90 minutes.
That's fast.
So it was so, so super fast. And I think it took like an hour, 15, hour 20 for her placenta to come out. And honestly, it may have taken longer, but eventually at some point she was just like, okay, can you help me get this out? Like, you know, she just kind of was over it being inside of her because sometimes moms do say sometimes it's uncomfortable. Until it comes out.
Especially if it's like partially released, but not fully. And so it's creating really, that like heavy pressure, but it's not
especially
out.
Like after your like first baby, any baby after that, your cramps tend to get worse with so for her, this was her second baby. So her cramps were just kind of like
a little harder
annoying to her. They were more painful, more uncomfortable. So eventually she was just like, can you help me get this out? Like, I just want it out. I want to be able to like be up and move around and reposition. So,
I'm glad you brought up those cramps because that's another small postpartum intervention that happens sometimes is the hospital just automatically offers you Motrin or ibuprofen and Tylenol. And it's to help those postpartum cramps. And you can absolutely take those if that's what you want to do. Yeah. But there are a lot of herbs and homeopathic remedies that can help keep those cramps at bay to where you don't even feel like you need the medicine. You know, and some people, you know, one of my favorite midwives in the area highly recommends the medicine. And that's because her postpartum cramps are so bad, they make her shake and get hot and vomit. And so she's like, lesser of two evils, right? I am a big fan of trying the herbs and the homeopathics first if you are comfortable with that kind of stuff because it really can make a huge difference.
I have a lot of clients who use herbs afterwards. And as long as you start them
as soon as the placenta is born.
As soon as the placenta is born, and stay on top of it for like the first 24 to 48 hours, they work great.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I actually gift all of my doula clients herbal remedy. Because I want them to have it. And a lot of them are too tired to go buy it themselves. So I just like include that with my package. But I used the herbs. And as long as I kept up on it, they totally did the job. It was only when I had forgotten to take a round of them. Because it's like you take it every 4 to 6 hours or so. When I'd forgotten to take a round, that's when they got really bad. So that's
and
just
guys,
something to that know
also,
that.
Right. Like that's preventative. When your uterus is cramping like that, that's preventative to help prevent postpartum hemorrhage in those days following the birth. So anytime your baby latches on, nipple stimulation starts that like big oxytocin surge, which again is forcing your uterus to clamp down to keep that bleeding at bay. So sometimes, I mean, even when we talk about birth or postpartum, reframing your mind as like, this isn't painful. This isn't a bad thing that's happening. This is actually helping my body. Sometimes even reframing that in your mind can help help with that.
Absolutely. And that brings me to a thought I just had. If you get, if you have that active management of the placenta and you get that Pitocin right away, that Pitocin is coming in and shutting off or discouraging your natural oxytocin. And Pitocin has a very short half-life. It's about 15 minutes. So as soon as that Pitocin has left your body, now your body's playing catch up for the bleeding because it's trying to boost your oxytocin more and more because it had already thought, oh, I don't have to work so hard on oxytocin. I'll stop producing so much. And then the Pitocin's gone and it's like, oh, wait, I do have to make oxytocin. And so, you know, initially maybe that Pitocin helps get things going, but then, you know, after that Pitocin's out of your system, now your body's having to work even harder. To keep things at bay, at least for a little bit of time. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. And studies do support expectant management of the placenta if you did not have Pitocin during your labor, like during the pushing phase. So like some people will have Pitocin during their labor, and as labor gets going, they slowly turn it off and let their natural hormones take over. If your natural hormones have taken over, expectant management of the placenta is really been shown to be the safer option. So, but if you had Pitocin during a transition, during pushing, all through the end of your labor, then you're probably going to need it postpartum, unfortunately. So,
What else? This has been a really long episode.
It has. Where are we? We're at, oh my gosh, we're at over an hour. Oh my gosh.
This might have to be two episodes.
I know. I might have to split this up. Oh, well, okay. We'll see.
Who cares? It's great information.
It's really, really great information. What was, there was one more thing that I said.
Well, we kind of at the beginning. It was breastfeeding, right?
Was it about breastfeeding? Yeah. And oh, we didn't say the whole thing that I wanted to say.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
In the hospital, they want you to feed your baby every 2 to 3 hours. They almost want you to put your baby on a schedule immediately. And if your baby has to go to the NICU, it's kind of hard not to do the schedule unless you're there the entire time. But if your baby's just in the hospital with you for 24 to 48 hours while you stay, then there is no reason to put your baby on a feeding schedule. You should feed on demand, even if the hospital is trying to push that schedule intervention. And something else to remember is they do not want your baby to go more than 3 or 4 hours without nursing, or they will come in and start like freaking out. It is normal after your baby's first or second feed, within just a few hours of birth, it is normal for your baby to fall asleep and sleep for 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
That is biologically normal for your baby because they're recovering from the entire birth. And that gives mom biologically, like, you know, just physiologically, it works together because it gives mom the chance to sleep as well and recover from the birth. And so when the hospital staff comes in and wants to wake you up every 2 to 3 hours to check on you or check on baby or make sure you fed your baby, it is interrupting that physiological 4 to 6 hour break that is very, very normal. And so that's something to keep in mind just with the hospital wanting you to feed your baby every 2 to 3 hours at minimum. Is that, you know, you might have to push back or, you know, say something like, yep, my baby's nice and full, or my baby has everything it needs, you know, to say things without lying, but giving them a satisfactory answer.
Or you could just be like me and lie.
I mean, you totally could do that too. I am the worst liar on the face of the planet.
Oh my gosh.
I cannot do it. I can't even like play jokes on people because I just like smile and I like can't contain my face. So I have to like leave the room when we're playing a joke on somebody or like, because I'll give it away because I'm a horrible, horrible liar.
So, I promise like, I'm not a liar. I'm just a little spicy.
Well, and sometimes you just, you know, sometimes you just have to say what you have to say because you know your baby best. And if the hospital doesn't respect it, it's like, you know, sometimes you just kind of run out of options on what to do. So, but I do want to know that feeding on a schedule is an is a postpartum intervention, you know, getting your the hospital staff pushing you for that. And even trying to wake and stimulate your baby in that 4 to 6 hours where they want to sleep. And they'll be like, strip your baby down, put a cool towel on him, blow on him, whatever. Or just let your baby sleep and recover from birth. So. I think that's the last one.
I think that's it.
Oh, good. Because we're like an hour and 20 minutes. It's just so hard for Tiffany and I because we just get so into these topics.
We're very passionate, if you, you can't know, tell.
We need to do like some speaking engagements or something.
I know, right? Oh my gosh, that would be amazing.
That'd be so crazy. I would love that.
That would be so cool.
And then we can talk as long as we want.
Exactly.
Or we get cut off.
So if anyone has any ideas or are putting on any workshops or anything like that, hit us up. We're happy to come chit chat about birth stuff.
We would love that. Just put us on a timer because we might not stop.
Okay, this
has been a really great intervention episode. I mean, like you said at the beginning, people don't think about those immediate postpartum interventions.
And it's our last one in our intervention series.
Other than our Q&A.
So crazy.
I can't believe we're finally done with it. But I'm so stoked to get out these other episodes we've recorded in this time. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. So listeners, even though you won't, your questions won't be able to be on our Q&A episode because we're going to record that soon. You can still send us any questions or ideas or stories or whatever. And sometimes we pepper those in anyway.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a Q&A episode. So check us out at The Natural Birth Site on Facebook and Instagram, thenaturalbirthsite.com. You can also fill out the contact form there. You know, engage with us on social media, ask us questions there, message us, whatever, and rate our podcast, please.
Yes.
And share it.
We appreciate it.
We really do. We really do. We will talk to you guys in the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.